CEO of Santec. They're currently busy with interviews, Chair. But the Santec, the COO, Ms. Temokole Shope, to also come and join the meeting. I think they would also then be joined by other senior officials from the respective entities. From the department, we also have the Acting Deputy Director General responsible for SOC oversight, Mr. Rendani Musetsa, and would also have then the Chief Director responsible for Santec, Dr. Mashilo Puluka, also joining. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, honorable members. I just needed to inquire because I see that members have already logged in. Just to inquire people from the entity to together with the department. Let me, it's 4 minutes past 10 now. Let me take this opportunity to welcome the honorable members to the select committee. I see we honorable members have already joined. The department, as led by the acting director general, the entities, the COO, and all members representing the entities. This committee meeting was supposed to happen, we changed the time from 15 hours to 10 o'clock, honorable members, because of the plenary in the afternoon, meaning that we had to reconsider the time so that we can then allow the plenary of the NCOP to happen in the afternoon and have maximum attendance of members to the plenary. We are going to move in accordance with the agenda put forward, where I'll request the acting secretary of the committee, Madia, to deal with the apologies that we have received from the department, as well as the apologies from honorable members. Madia.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, Chief. Good morning, members. From the apologies side, we have an apology from Minister. We also have an apology from Deputy Minister. There's an apology from Honorable Labuskagni, and a standing apology from Honorable Makawusi, and then also an apology from Honorable Gwenya, who lost a sister this week. So those are the apologies, Chief.
Thank you very much. Do we have any other apology except those ones that we have received?
Yes, Chair, those are the three apologies from members, and then the Deputy Minister. And as indicated, there's also the apology from Honorable Gwenya as well. I'm not sure if you heard if you heard me earlier.
Okay. Yes, Honorable Gwenya has got a bereavement, and we have got the standing apology of Honorable Mukause as well, and Honorable Labuskagni. Those are the apologies. I think we must indicate that we haven't been having the minister for some time, acting DG. You must indicate to her we can't move without her coming to our committee. We can understand today because we changed the time from 3 o'clock to 10 o'clock. But our expectation is that when we change it to 3 o'clock, is to accommodate the cabinet so that at least honorable ministers are able to be part of our meeting. we want you to carry that message. When you are here, you will carry even the difficult messages to your bosses. Thank you very much.
Sorry, Chair. My apologies, Chair. I was trying to raise my hand.
Okay.
Also, there's an apology, as I indicated earlier, that both the Minister and the Deputy Minister are in the Cabinet Committee. So the apologies from the Deputy Minister as well.
Okay. No, it has been noted. Honorable Anos?
Chairperson, yeah. Thank you. Chairperson, thank you. Good morning to the members and then also to the officials. Chairperson, the Acting Director General mentioned in the apologies that the Sentech CEO is not present, so maybe he will get us on the way. Can we have an indication, is there a delegation here from Sentech, and who is present here? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Arnold. The Acting Director General said there is the COO, that is representing Sentech for now, until they finalize the interviews that side and join us. Thank you very much, honorable members. We are going to hand over to you, Acting Director General, as the one leading the team. You will take the committee through the issues that the committee needs you to explain on the merger between BBI and Sentech and any other issue related to that.
Honorable Matile.
Honorable Nana.
Thank you. Good morning. Man, I'm worried we're glancing over this issue of the CEO of Sentech not being here and has sent a COO. When I listened to the apologies, apparently he has interviews. Now, I would want to establish from our side, when was this invitation sent to Sentech? How far back did they know about this meeting? Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much. Madia, I know we send out invitations on time from the committee.
If I can just say that I am aware that my colleague Lolly sent out these invitations last year already. So it was towards in the end of 2020 already these invitations were sent out.
Okay. Acting DG.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, yes, the invitations were sent, and a very good morning to the Honourable Nana for as well. Chair, up until when the times were changed, the CEO of Sentech was actually available, Chair. And I also want to just also indicate that he tried by all means. The actual interviews, Chair, if I can take them, the select committee into confidence. They were in the process of recruiting a CFO, and cabinet had approved the new CFO, but unfortunately the CFO then declined owing to the environment, the conditions that we're going to explain to now, part of this presentation. And because we are moving closely to the year end, as you know, any institution critically, they need a CFO on board, and therefore he tried by all means to shift the interviews, but because it was already pre-scheduled with all the candidates, he unfortunately couldn't make it, and that's the sincere apology from his side. Had the committee kept the original schedule, he would have made it for the 3 o'clock, unfortunately. So he then extends his apology, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nana. That is the explanation.
It's pleasing, Chairperson.
Okay.
Thank you. Satisfactory.
Thank you very much. Acting DG, I'm handing over to you. You will tell me when you are done and bring back the ropes back to the chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. It's tempting what you've just said in terms of keeping the ropes. Clearly, there is that opportunity. We'll try not to abuse that, Chair.
Okay.
A very good morning once again, honourable members. I think what we bring to you today is a very critical matter, especially under COVID, as you would know. So the issue of connectivity remains vital for all society, irrespective of where you are at. And in that regard, Chair, you will recall that in 2016, we adopted the ICT policy white paper, and we had already made the presentation to the Select Committee on the holistic white paper and its intent. Amongst others, we then proposed for the establishment of a new institutional framework where we are aggregating all ICT infrastructure in the country, state-owned infrastructure, to best serve and reposition them to then ensure the wide connectivity on a technology basis. In that regard, Chair, we've been working, the Minister has established a joint oversight forum consisting of CENTEC as well as BBI. At the moment, the first phase of the merger is between these two entities, which is CENTEC and BBI, both of whom have got their own respective mandates. And we felt that both are responding to the issue of digital infrastructure. The latter part, Chair, we are currently in conversation and very positive conversations with our colleagues at the Department of Public Enterprise with regards to aggregation of other infrastructure, ICT infrastructure that are basically held from the department, mainly under ESCOM, SANRAL, as well as PRAFA. We intend then to, as part of phase two, to look at then the relevant policy, review the policies to then ensure the aggregation of this infrastructure. As I indicated, Chair, I'm joined by the acting DDG, Mr. Rendani Musetta, as well as the Chief Director, Dr. Mashilo Buluga, who will then take us through the presentation. I'll kindly ask thank you very much. May I then request DDG Musetta to please take us through.
Thank you, ATG, and thank you, Chair, and good morning, honorable members. I will be the one taking you through the presentation that we have prepared. I think from our side, although we have noted that the committee requested the entities to be the ones that are presenting, we felt that since the entire responsibility around the merger lies with the department, we then had a joint discussion with the entities and agreed on the approach and agreed that the department would then be the one that takes the lead in terms of just making sure that we lay the groundwork where necessary the entities would come in also. So just to indicate that this was a joint discussion that we had with the entities and agreed that since we are the ones who are leading with the project, then we can be able to lay that ground to yourselves. We can go to the next slide. So in this presentation, what we are highlighting is that, as the ATG was indicating, is that we had to consider the policy imperatives in terms of the work that we were undertaking. On the basis of that, we had to look at the Presidential Review Commission, the 2012 PRC report, and the recommendations, where they were mainly talking about the need for the state to start consolidating some of the state-owned entities, and some of them, you know, were due for repurposing, just to ensure that they are aligned with what they with it.
Okay, so what you do is will you go to slideshow?
Madhya, can you mute? And can you assist to put that on a slideshow so that it can be visible, all of it?
Oh, okay. In the meantime, I can be continuing. Yeah. So in this slide, we really just indicating the policy imperatives that guided us in ensuring that we come up with this, as to how we came up with this with this measure. So it was part of the PRC, of implementation of the PRC report, which was calling for the consolidations of the SOCs across the government. So what we did as the then DTPS was to then look at those that were reporting to the to the DTPS, and then see, and then did an exercise of then looking at them. So how do we ensure that we start to do that implementation of the PRC report, and that then led us into coming up into the conclusion that some we can classify some as infrastructure SOCs, and then some could then be classified as services entities. So this is the beginning of the infrastructure part of it, which then looks at those entities that are mainly looking at the infrastructure side of the sector, of the ICT sector. So that's when we embarked on this. And on the services side, it's the one that we are dealing with, the repurposing of CETA, that is on the services side. But here we are here to present then the merger of BBI and Centec, because those were the ones that then fall in the category of the infrastructure, the infrastructure category. So I think we can move to the next slide. So in terms of the recommendations from the PRC, made 31 recommendations, and then it also indicated that foundational recommendations that government should develop an overarching long-term strategy for SOCs, and the strategy must be aligned to the objectives of the developmental state. It must then find articulation in the white paper on SOC based on further recommendations, which the white paper should aim to inform a comprehensive SOC Act. So this is the responsibility of the Department of Public Enterprises in terms of looking at the holistic approach. But what we then did was to then to assist that that process by looking at the ones that reside within the DTPS, so that then they will then form part of the entire SOC reform that the DPE, the Department of Public Enterprises, is responsible for. We can go forward. We can go to the National Development Plan also. We then looked at the National Development Plan in terms of then what does it say when it comes to the ICT sector. So what we then looked at, or what we then found, was that it was talking about the necessity for South Africa to develop a seamless information infrastructure that would be universally available and accessible. The state's role should primarily be around the facilitation of competition and private investment, to ensure effective regulation where market failure is apparent, to intervene directly to meet specific special social goals. Direct involvement would be limited to interventions to ensure universal access and to help marginalized communities develop the capacity to use ICT effectively. Stimulate sector growth and innovation by driving public and private sector investment. And this we are doing even also in terms of the other project within the department, which is the SA Connect. The LDP spoke to the establishment of a common carrier network, applying open access policies to encourage sharing of certain elements of the backbone fiber network without discouraging private sector long-term investment. So this is why this is part of what we're doing also in terms of the measure, and also on the SA Connect, to ensure that also there is private sector investment in so doing in terms of the broadband rollouts across the country. We can go to the next one. Then there has been the South Africa Connect policy also that we have looked at, and then it was speaking to the support of C15, which aims to ensure universal services and access that is reliable, affordable, and that is secure for all South Africans, including even prioritizing the rural areas and underserviced areas, to ensure that we stimulate the economic growth. The intent of South Africa Connect was described as being to provide a clear framework for the implementation of an open access regime for the wireless and fiber networks to enable broadband rollout. It was suggested that South Africa should pull public sector demand and procurement of appropriate network capacity. Also, it then advocated for the establishment of a broadband council at the time that it was developed. Okay, if we can move to the next one. Also, as the ADG did indicate, in terms of the ICT policy review, the ICT policy review also spoke of the open access on all platforms, including fixed, wireless, and fiber, must be mandated through the policy to achieve full last mile connectivity. The policy in this regard must be developed, which provides for fair pricing and quality of services. This infrastructure sharing must be regulated at all levels of the network. Active network sharing is encouraged, and an appropriate legal and regulatory framework must be developed to ensure smooth roaming arrangements between operators without any uncertainties, and also ensure the alignment with C15, which speaks to the infrastructure development. Okay. And the policy review went further to then say, so in doing that, there are critical questions that we must ask ourselves, or that we must answer as we do that. So it the questions goes like, does the entity have a distinct mandate focused on meeting clearly articulated public goals? Are there any overlaps or conflicts between the mandates and responsibilities set for the entity? Also, are there any overlaps or conflicts between the mandates and or responsibilities of entities and those set for government departments or any government agencies? Has there been a thorough assessment to ensure that the mandate cannot or is not likely to be fulfilled by either the executive or the private sector? Could the responsibility or function be better fulfilled through partnership with non-governmental organizations and private sector? So these are the questions that when we were developing the business cases, we had to ensure that we align and we are responding to these questions as outlined in the ICT policy review, as the ADD has indicated. We can go to the last one. On this one, so what we then did was then in that interpretation, then we, before we could even start to do the merger or to go for the merger, we then went to cabinet with a framework just to indicate to them the interpretation of what the policies are saying, and they're advocating and indicating to them the response that we are intending to do. So we went with an intention to then indicate to cabinet that this is the way we are intending to go about after doing all that assessment. So and cabinet approved that we can continue with the work in terms of the consolidation of the infrastructure and the phases that the ADG was indicating, in terms of starting with BBI and Centec, and then we'll then look at companies like USASA and also non-ICT government entities, the ones that the ADG was referring to, in terms of those that house the infrastructure, but do not necessarily have the broadband infrastructure or the broadband as their core mandate. So we're going to consider that, and as it was indicated, we have started talking to the Department of Public Enterprises, because we know Eskom and Transnet already, they house substantial capacity, broadband capacity, which it is in excess, and they are not necessarily utilizing it, although that has been deployed for their own use. In terms of for Eskom, it would be for electricity distribution, as well as in terms of Transnet, then it would be for the railway operations. So that fiber is there and is sitting in those entities in excess. It is in excess in the sense that the pairs, the fiber pairs that they utilize in the deployed fiber, they're utilizing almost 10% of what has been deployed, and the rest it's just lying within that. So that is why we call it excess broadband capacity, which then can then be utilized and be consolidated be utilized for an extensive broadband rollout under the state digital infrastructure company that we are advocating for here. Just to mention that we are merging BBI and Centec to form what we call the state digital infrastructure company. And also what cabinet has approved was that because we went to cabinet in terms of the analysis that we have done, and that we wanted to form these two companies, being the state digital infrastructure company as well as the state digital services company. At the time when we went to cabinet, we were still calling it a state IT company. But now, in terms of what we are doing, we're just differentiating them as the services company as well as the infrastructure company. We can go to the PC4IR. I think I've already explained most of this, just at the slides, the way they were done. So in terms of the PC4IR, is that the PC4IR advocates for the following, that with respect to broadband rollout and government services digitalization, that is e-government, the state appeared to rely excessively on its own resources and capacities, and at times leading to inefficiency, which these are the inefficiencies that we are trying to address. So, and then it indicated that there is room to consolidate, to consider leveraging more private investment and expertise in key areas such as infrastructure deployment, skills development, and the rollout. And it also speaks to this is especially pertinent in the context of South Africa government commitment also for the fiscal consolidation. We can go further for. So it then says, ideally, all of the government communications networks should be consolidated into one network, partially owned by government. Government should utilize existing and source additional fiscal networks from the private sector. From the private sector. However, the state must retain ownership of the network services layer. So this is what we are trying to do in terms of the services layer. Yeah. We then say that then it can be designated to another state under the custody of the state, which is what we are doing in terms of the repurposing. So we will carve out those services, and then they will have to go and. Digital, the existing networks of CETA, PBI, Centec, ESCOM, SANRAL, and PRASA must be established. That is what the PC4IR has advocated for, and also that we need to have. Put in place, and also the issues that we are dealing with as a department around the spectrum. These are some of the things that we're dealing with in the department to ensure the success of these entities that we seek to establish. If we can move forward. So then with that, then we then had to come up with then the principles. So what are the principles on the basis of those policy guidelines that we have just read there? Then we then say, so what would then be the principles guiding the establishment of this entity? Then we indicated that it shall be established as a state-owned wholesaler of digital infrastructure, although in terms of the strategy itself, we may look to extend it in terms of those capabilities that sit, more especially when we look at the capabilities that sit with Centec, then we may we will have to expand those in terms of parts of the retail infrastructure digital services, retail services. Also, it shall seek to address market failures in the provision of broadband and broadcasting access throughout South Africa. Its direct involvement in broadband and broadcasting will also ensure universal services access, and ensure that the marginalized communities have access to this. It will also strive to ensure that public health, public education facilities, and rural government facilities have access to broadband infrastructure, which is the work that we have already started. Also, in terms of the SA Connect, and also SA Connect Phase 1 has already started to address some of this, utilizing this infrastructure from the SOCs already. We have already started to work on this on the SA Connect Phase 1. As now we are now moving to Phase 2 of that. Its infrastructure will be a composite of existing digital networks, as we have indicated back there, and also consideration will be given in terms of what then goes on in terms of the provincial as well as municipal broadband rollouts. So even those will be considered, and we will then have to find models of then how do we ensure that we work together and ensure that we assist also even the municipalities and the provincial governments in terms of meeting their broadband requirements. And also we indicated that it will strive to become the preferred digital infrastructure provider to organs of state, but this will also be guided by the SA Connect, because already we have started with the implementation of the SA Connect, and then this entity would then have to ensure that we play a role in terms of that implementation of the SA Connect. It will perform the function of a common carrier broadband, indicating that this number of broadcaster. So this was just to indicate that in terms of the transmission of the content, so this entity will ensure that it is not just only digital services, also the broadcasting services would have to be carried through in this throughout this this entity. We will indicate below also in terms of how this is going to work together, and how this distribution of both broadband and broadcasting services could then be achieved. We can move forward. I think most of the things are the things that we have already indicated. So this is the technical viability feed in terms of when we were doing an assessment of the two entities in terms of then saying, so how do you then bring them together, and how does this technology converge in terms of then ensuring that there is that connectivity. Utilizing what we already have, because so basically what we are trying to do, or what we tried from a technical perspective, the question that we were trying to answer was to then say, how do you ensure that everywhere where there is radio, where everybody is able to listen to radio, you utilize that infrastructure to ensure that then there shall be digital services, so to increase the reach and the footprint of what we have in terms of the backhaul that sits within a broadband infraco, and then ensure that we use the distribution reach that sits within the capabilities of Centec. So that was the crux of what we are trying to do, and ensuring that there is that reach for the broader community. So what we are indicating here is that you could then utilize the core network that sits. So what you can see there, the cloud that says BBI Fiber Cloud, we are just using it as the core that sits within BBI, because BBI has a broadband network that then goes across the country. It's a nationwide a broadband network backhaul, which ensures that it connects from Joburg, Cape Town, Durban, and back to Joburg. So that network is the fiber that sits within BBI. So one, what we have then established is to say, in terms of fiber and how fiber works, it does not matter what you push through it. It could be broadcasting content, or it could be just direct digital services that you could push through those. So what you then do is to then that, then you can then link that with the base stations that sits within Centec. And then from there, since Centec also has the satellite capabilities, which goes even into the underserved areas, to the rural areas, then you can have those links. Then that broadband content and broadcasting content going through those huge pipes that sit within BBI, and push that through to the microwave links, and then the microwave links would, you would then have different ways of distributing that. You can have direct microwave links, or you can have microwave links via the satellite to ensure that you reach almost everybody, all government facilities, as we have mentioned back there. And also you can have a direct link of fiber that goes to those communities that are within the reach that the BB, the broadband infracos fiber is, then you can have direct link to that. That then starts to even have the spillovers to some of the issues that we're trying to address in terms of the SABC, as the SABC is part of the stable that within the DCDT. Also, you can start to offer with that, with the link that starts to speak to, with this link that starts to speak to with direct links, then you can start to offer things like cable TV. You know, those are some of the proposals that could then come in terms of enhancing also the offering of SABC. Those are some of the things that with this entity, once it has been done. So this is the technical feat or strategic feat that we have seen and has ensured that we then pursue, you know, this, because we feel that this would really address some of those challenges, and this is how we are planning to ensure that that gets addressed across cloud. But then it just shows that from all those points of presence, then we can be then be able to extend these links the way we have just indicated here. Okay, we can move to the next slide. So here we just trying to indicate that it also there is complementaries between these technologies, and also as we were indicating there. So those who are just indicating the complementaries, and it starts to speak to the product that can then be developed, that can also then be developed under the merged entity, and we're indicating in terms of for broadband, that then broadband would then be able to then have access to those locations that sit under that is broadband infrastructure, would have access to those facilities that are under CENTEC, to be able to then push both broadband services as well as broadcasting services. So this is where just speaking to those services, complementary services. We can proceed to the next slide. Okay, so we just indicating that and those links. So this slides, they just sort of like just trying to explain what I've explained in that diagram. So we can move in that. And then in terms of the financial viability, so the exercise that we've done in terms of even indicating how then the entity, the merged entity, would then be able to start generating, what are the things that you would be considered in terms of the products that they will then have, and then and also inform the revenues that could then be possible revenues that can be had. So both entities operate in the broadband industry that we have considered. That's what we have considered, and that although they use two different technologies, meaning that the other one is mainly on the backhaul fiber, whereas the other one is on the wireless, the microwave links that you have that. You have seen, and that you have seen there. It will accordingly be positioning itself as an open access network and last mile provider. That is the point that I was making when we were talking about the wholesale there, to then say that with those services that we have indicated in themselves, you cannot just separate them and just make it a wholesale provider only, without ensuring that in terms of its expanding its reach, there will be a need for access network and also for last mile. And also the explanation that we're given there, that we will be providing significant coverage for both radio and TV with terrestrial and digital terrestrial platforms. So those are the issues that we were just trying to explain there, that this would really be the main product that would then assist it in terms of the revenue generations, and ensuring that this it is sustainable. I think we can go to the next one, to the next slide. Okay, so here we just want then, so with that background, just to give you an overview of what we were trying to, or what we are trying to do, or what we mean by the merger between BBEI and Centec. So those were the considerations that we have done. So I just wanted to give that, and then I will then give you in terms of where we are, in terms of implementing that, what is it that we are doing, and how far and how far we are in trying to implement that. So what we have done is that we have drafted the business case. We've developed a business case to ensure that we then put all those that thinking into a business case. For us to be able to then respond to what cabinet has charged us with, because they said we would then have to come back with the bill, but for us to come up with a bill, we would then have to the bill must be supported by a business case. So we have developed a business case. The minister has approved the business case. We had consulted internally with the business case before the minister could even give the approval to ensure that it is aligned. So the internal facilitation or the internal consultation, it does help in ensuring that the business case itself, when it comes out, it speaks to all the other programs within the department. So we had to do that assessment within the department for quite a period to ensure that when it comes out, it then it is aligned with all the other initiatives. As you were hearing me talking about the SA Connect, the alignment with the SA Connect, we have to align also with the spectrum issues. We have to align also with the digital development fund, you know, so that all of them starts to speak to each other. And even when it goes up, the minister did approve that, and then the next step was then to then send the business case to the Ministry of Finance as well as Minister of Public Service and Administration. Apologies for the typo there. It was supposed to be DPSA, Minister of Public Services and Administration. So we have since sent those. We are in terms of concurrence. So we need to receive concurrence from Minister of Finance as well as Minister of Public Service and Administration. We are already at an official level. We are already starting to talk and taking through the colleagues at National Treasury as well as DPSA through this work, you know, so that then they can then be able to make an informed decision as they concur with the minister, with the Minister of Communication and Digital Technologies. So that's where we are. And as the acting DG has indicated, also she has also indicated that and then the minister has formed a joint oversight forum or committee, which then will then look at the implementation. So what we are doing is that, because now we are getting into a phase of drafting the bill itself, now that we have finalized the business case. So what we are doing that is that we then looking for a legal opinion in terms of then say, so how do we go about it in terms of ensuring that we implement this? Do we have to go through the whole legislative process, or can we then utilize one of the legislations which may be resides under Centec or under BBI to speed up the process and ensure if those do really contain all the aspirations that we have indicated. So we are consulting with the senior counsel on this one to give us guidance in terms of what would then be a way of ensuring that we realize that which we want to do. So that's where we are. And in terms of the joint oversight committee that then the minister will then have to approve the terms of reference, establishing that forum. So that forum is a forum that will be chaired by the minister. It will contain the chairpersons, the CFOs, as well as the CEOs of the entities, but it will be supported by a task team that will then ensure that implementation. So whilst we will be doing, so what we're trying to do is that whilst we will be going through the legislative process, which would really take long, as we all know, you know, the legislative process, it's a very intensive process that, you know, we will be going through. But what we have decided is to say, so whilst we are doing that, we must be on the other side, be ensuring that the entities are starting to collaborate, the entities are starting to work together. So what we have done is that we have requested the entities to then start with the development of the corporate strategy. Together jointly developing the corporate strategy, so that then by the time that the legislative process is concluded, the entities on the other side in terms of the corporate strategy should then be ready, so that then the merger then becomes seamless once the once the legislative process gets concluded, so that we don't just drag this for longer already, as it is already starting to affect the entities, because it's long that we've been talking about this. So we're just ensuring, because it does destabilize the entities if we don't conclude this on time. So that is what we are trying to balance in terms of now, as we'll be going through the legislative process, we must be ready on the other side, so that we don't waste any more time. You know, because usually what happens is that you wait for the legislation to get concluded. That's when you start talking about your corporate strategies and all that, and it takes another 1 or 2 years to be able to do that. So we then thought that it's better that we run this concurrently, so that we don't continue with this destabilization of the entities due to perceptions, more especially of the employees, as ADG was indicating around the issues of the CFOs, and for them to be able to recruit, and people looking at this and saying, no, but soon you are going to be merged and all that. So we just want to ensure that this merger really gets fast tracked, and also that is why we are requesting the senior council to also assist us to then say, how do we then ensure that we implement this the best possible way, and also in a limited really time, if it is possible. But we will get that from the senior council. We can go down. Yes, no, I think this I've already explained. It's issues around the Joint Oversight Committee and how it will be constituted. We can continue. So this is part of the corporate strategy that we are talking about. That is the other trajectory that we are talking about. And I think at this stage, these are the two slides which I would request the entities to take us through. I think on this ADG, I think it's Phumza Diani that could be able to assist us on these two slides, just two quick slides that they will take us through then the development of the corporate strategy. I'll hand over to BDI and Centec to assist us with the two slides. ADG, can I hand over to BDI and Centec to assist us on this one, please?
Yes. Thank you very much, Rendani. I'm just concerned that I may not be audible for long, because we are on long.
I think there is
I think we're okay. Using Phumza.
Good morning, ATG. I don't know if I'm audible, because I'm struggling. We are on load shedding this side. Am I?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
No, she's
Rendani, I could come in on this one.
Thanks.
Thank you, Rendani. Good morning, Chair and Committee. I think this is really an outline of what the process of the development of the strategy entailed. So we outline here the process that we undertook in the journey to develop the strategy. Rendani highlighted that we have developed a strategy for the merged entity. It's in its final stages of approval, but it has been concluded. So from the outset, there was a lot of research, market-related data capabilities of both Centec, BBI considered. The market looked into in terms of where can we fit perfectly and where can we be competitive as a meshed entity. So this then, obviously, after that, culminated into other various activities, workshop, where we had workshops, we had set out, established a task team focusing on the development of a strategy from both Centec, BBI, and the department representative there. So this talked to communication and engagement and the also development and iterative content of the strategy and the how we converge and diverge, and then the alignment, of course, of that. So really, it's just the roadmap which led to the development of the strategy, as Rendani has highlighted. Thank you.
Okay, good. The next slide.
Yes, then this is the timeline of development of the strategy itself. On the far left side, you see the individual tasks, and then on the roadmap itself, you see the timeline of each of those activities. Starting from the first one was the project planning, the scoping and definition of the project and the designs, the various workshops that I talked about a little bit earlier. Then we had the first draft around December thereabout, which was up for review by both entities. And we also had some feedback and then reincorporated the feedback into the strategy around about January. So we had then the improved draft there ready for submission for final approval by both Excos of BBI and Centec, which later then once approved was submitted to the board for final feedback. And the final strategy is with the shareholder as we speak. The timeline starts, as you can see from right on the top of the schedule there, from the 20th of November to the middle of March. So that's where we at with the strategy. Thank you.
Yes, yeah, we will just conclude with the just overview, high level timelines from the side of the department in terms of the legislative process that we have talked about. Is that in quarter one, as we've indicated, that we'll be engaging the colleagues at National Treasury as well as Public Service and Administration to ensure that we get the proper approvals from their side, proper concurrence from their side, and also ensure that we obtain the certification from the state law advisors in terms of the bills, and then we will be going through the cluster system in terms of the bills, submitting the bills through the cluster system, and then finally at the end, and then ensure that the revised bills are then submitted to cabinet for them to be introduced to parliament. So this is the annual plan that we have, and also just to then extend in terms of what we'll be doing parallel, as Tebogo was indicating, that the strategy has been developed together with some of the issues that ADG spoke about in terms of the infrastructure consolidations. Those are some of the things that we will be considering, and also the policy issues, the development of policies around guiding the business plan, and also the governance matters and issues. Those are some of the things that we will be doing concurrently with the legislation. legislative process. I would like to stop. I would like to stop there. And thank you very much, honourable members, and the chair as well as the ADG. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Before I hand over to you, and in conclusion from the department, this presentation is very critical, Chair, for a number of reasons. The fact is, the first one is that it has a direct impact, Chair, on the constituencies whom Honourable Chair as well as members you serve, and also to ensure that no one is left unconnected. The presentation also supports connectivity to critical sectors, as you know. Certainly one of those is education. We need to ensure that all schools are connected as we move towards a digital society, and as well as remote learning. This would ensure and support that. Similarly, for the health sector, we also need to know to ensure that all clinics as well as health facilities are connected, especially the public ones. We're already doing that under the SA Connect, a part of phase two, and we want therefore to strategically position this new state digital infrastructure company to serve that. And lastly, to also connect the government institutions. But also we intend to reposition it, this company. We intend to reposition it so that it can compete commercially as well.
G, who is not muted? Okay, you can continue acting, DG.
Thank you. So the intent is also that with these licenses, that it would also compete commercially, Chair, so that we can also reduce the cost of communication, which is one of the issues that as a country we have been struggling with over the years. And then lastly, Chair, we're hoping that with your support, that when it is then introduced to Parliament, we will then get your support to ensure that we establish then the new state digital infrastructure company through this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Acting DG. Rolivua wo kotumunene wo rendani for the presentation. Thank you very much. I will now move to the honorable members to ask questions, starting with Honorable BB, Honorable Arnold, Honorable Smith, I see your hand is here, Honorable Nana, and then lastly, Honorable Mudise, in that order, honorable members.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to...
Before you can continue, I don't know if Honorable Kluta is he in the meeting. If he's there, we'll then allow him to speak. I didn't see him here. Yeah, you can continue, Honorable Bibi.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Greetings to the team from the department and also from entities and also from my colleagues. Chairperson, I've got two questions here. Questions for Centec and Broadband Infraco. The first question, Honorable Chairperson, I would say it appears to me that this process of merging the two entities will require a considerable amount of capital, especially when taking into consideration Broadband Infraco's liabilities in terms of her balance sheet. What I want to know is whether this process is fully funded or not. If yes, will the money come from National Treasury only, or there are equity partners who will bring in some funds? That's my first question, Honorable Chairperson. And the second question will be, how long will the process to take, will the process take to complete the merger of all the entities identified under the state digital infrastructure company and for it to be operational? Those are my two questions, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable B. Honorable Arnolds.
Thank you, Chairperson, and also thank you for the update presentation of the merger of the two entities. Chairperson, building a bigger and a better state-owned infrastructure company, the success of any entity, we have seen it over the years now. To run efficient and effectively, it's like good governance, the most important principles to have good governance and no corruption, and then also driving the entities that all South Africans can be proud of in terms of what they need to do and they also their performance. But let me ask the question in terms of, because I also see in the presentation that there is make mention of that the entity shall adhere to the highest standard and good governance. This is things that we have heard all over from all the other entities, and now we see that most of the entities is not performing at all. But let me go into the detail of the presentation. Let me ask the department that during your discussion with the two entities regarding the merger, what was the main concerns raised by the entities? And then the second question is, in terms of the workers' impact on the merger, will there be any? If yes, how will the merger impact on the workers? And if not, seeing that we're going to see a bigger entity, are we going to see an increase in workers also? I think I will leave the two for now. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Smith.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson. Firstly, Honorable Chairperson, I must say it's quite ironic because that we're having this discussion today, because with the load shedding, and network problems, and me also having a network problem to get on this morning. So I do apologize to everybody for coming on late. Chairperson, my first question would relate to the Honorable Bibi also, in terms of the cost of this merger, because if we think about a new logo, communicating that the new name, new logo, all of that, the setup of all the things around those issues, as well as the cost of the merger, I would like to know what will be spent on this merger to finalize the entire process until it's one entity. The second question I have, Honorable Chair, is in terms of the labor issue that was also mentioned by the Honorable Arnold. But I want to know, because obviously it needs to save the taxpayers money at the end of the day and be a more efficient entity. So we can't have multiple people at higher level, CEOs and so forth. So what will the cost implication be on reducing, especially at the top and the middle management level, to make it more streamlined, because we found in many instances where there is mergers of whatever, whether it's entity or municipalities or whatever, that at the end of the day, those institutions sit with duplication of positions, which then becomes very difficult to sort out because of the labor, you know, labor legislation and the whole process to do that. So what is the plan around that, and what is the spending going to be, you know, to streamline, especially the management of the two entities? Then, Chairperson, I would like to know, in terms of Elon Musk's Starlink project, you know, that is with the Starlink satellite network, how does that impact on the entity, and what is the relationship between the entity and SpaceX's Starlink project? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nana. I'm sure you are okay now with the network.
Yes, I am, Chairman. Thank you very much. I'm sorry, I also got kicked out a short while ago because of connectivity issues. Chairman, you see, merging entities is no child's play, and colleagues, I'm sure, have raised some of the issues that I would have wanted to raise. The only person that I could hear from beginning to end is Honorable Smith. So please pardon me if colleagues have made comments or have asked questions that I would be repeating. It's only because I didn't hear, I wasn't part of the meeting. As I said, I got disconnected for a short while. So colleagues will recall that throughout the country, shortly before the 2016 local government elections, a number of municipalities were merged, which really made sense on paper. But that came with a lot of difficulties. You would merge a financially struggling municipality with no assets, weak balance sheet, bloated staff, bank overdraft out of the roof, and you will merge it with a fairly stable municipality. That caused untold setbacks to those municipalities. And what I want to check from the department, Chairperson, is that have they learned any lessons in measures of this kind? Have they done some research in so far as these kind of measures are concerned, even if it means it's in the private sector? And if yes, what are the threats that they picked up that could pose a danger in a viable and a successful one entity? That's the first one, Chairman. The second one, in page 16 of the presentation, the presenter, and then please correct me if I'm wrong, and I wish I'm wrong, I got a sense that packaging a product offering seems to be an afterthought. In page 16 of the presentation, he says, well, after the merger, it's only then that we will sit down and decide on what we'll be offering. And if that is true, to me it's scary, Chairman. I hope I'm wrong, and I would really want to get a comment in that regard. Thirdly, he says, if this thing is taking longer, it will continue to destabilize both entities because people are unsure about their futures and so on and so on. But ironically, Chairman, whilst there is a merger of two entities, I will assume that broadband Infraco has a CFO already. Centec is recruiting a CFO. Was it not prudent on the part of Centec and broadband Infraco for that matter to freeze some of these key posts? Because if you employ a CFO at Centec today, knowing that in 2 years to come, his or her position will be redundant because there is another CFO at broadband Infraco, makes absolute no sense to me. So really my question is, was it not prudent or is it not prudent on both entities to suspend recruitment, particularly recruitment as I mentioned of senior executives, because inevitably you will have a duplication, and in this instance you would have caused that duplication yourself, something that could have been prevented. And lastly, Chair, it's a proposal to you, and really it's up to you, Chair, if you are keen on taking it. Page 17, the gentleman mentioned the business case, which has already been developed, and it's been taken to the minister. The minister has approved it, which is great. And I think it's now going to two departments, Treasury and Public Administration and whatever, Public Service and Administration for concurrence. I wanted to check, will it not be appropriate when all those concurrences and processes are completed that the committee be briefed about the business case? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nana. Honorable Mudise, I saw you were coming in and out. I don't know whether you were able to get us. But it's your chance if you have got questions.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I, like you said, I've been getting out and in and out. Maybe I'm going to repeat the questions that the members have been asking. But my question will be, if it's not asked, okay. When you are measuring two entities or three, it means it's going to affect the employee around there. I just want to check whether did the department and the entities, both of them, Centec and sit down with the unions, if the unions are there. Did the unions agree on the measure? And then after that, how many staff is going to be affected? And when their staff are affected, are the entity 12 and the department look upon the skills, critical skills that they need to be there in the entity? The second one, Chair, is when we started the meeting, we were told the one of CFO. I just want to check why the entity recruiting the CFO, whereas they are on the process of merging, or other entity doesn't have a CFO, because if they have two CFO in the same two entities, what is going to happen? Because they were supposed to wait until the merger has completed, and then they have one CEO and CFO. So, and then it's skills, critical skills, and the how many people that are going to be employed, lose job, and what are the future of these employees? Are they going to be deployed to other entities or to the department, or are they going home in this difficult time where we are? What is going to happen about those employees? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Acting DG.
To respond thereafter, if there are any questions that are left, will then be, I'll take those up. Thank you. If I could maybe start with we can start with the entities, perhaps both the CEO of BBI as well as the COO of Centex.
Okay. CEO, you can start. And COO, any one of the two? You are muted.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Honorable Chairperson, members of the committee, colleagues from the department, our shareholder ministry, as well as the colleagues from Centec. My name is Andrew Matseke. Others will need to be will be best answered by the department. The first question that was asked was around funding. Will this entity require funding? Where will the funding come from? I think the answer to that is that we are in the process of developing the strategy for this entity. I think that was one of the items that were mentioned on the timeline. And part of the outcome of that process will be to also indicate the level and type of funding that the entity will require. What I can say is that the the approach of this merger. This merger is premised on the term shock rationalization. My personal feeling is it's unfortunate choice of term, because when you mention rationalization, the implication is you are reducing. But the idea behind the merger is that BBI and Sentech combined will grow in terms of revenue and profitability better than in their current form as separate entities. So the if we understand that the one of the business motives is growth, then some of the answers that we are going to give to the questions that were raised will start to make sense, hopefully. Then out of that process, we will work out that the quantum of funding that will be required. And my assessment as a person managing one of the entities that are being merged is that yes, funding will be required to fund growth in terms, and when I'm talking about funding, I'm talking about funding to make additional investments in infrastructure to enable the entity to grow. I'm not talking about set up funding. I think the issue of set up funding will probably be the lowest proportion of the funding that will be required. The bulk of the funding that will be required will be for investment in infrastructure to enable the entity to grow. The other question that was, and where will that funding come from? I think we are not there yet. So that will come out of the strategy, the business strategy formulation process. You know, whether that funding, does it come from the National Treasury? Does it come from the private sector? My view is we are not there yet. But if I can offer insight based on my involvement in the process and my understanding of the business will be that the funding, the best candidates for that infrastructure funding will probably be institutions such as the Development Bank of Southern Africa, the IDC, which also, by the way, is a shareholder in BBI. So that's more where we will be looking at, since the funding will be for infrastructure rather than corporate setup. I don't know if my counterparts from Sentech or from the department want to add anything on the issue of funding before we move to the next question, which was about the timelines for the merger, how long the merger will take. Sentech Teboho, acting DG, I don't know if you would like to add anything on the issue of funding. And I will pause for now before we tackle the next item.
Okay, I can come in. Randani again. Yes, yeah, in terms of the funding, even the way we are trying to set up an entity, we're setting it up to be a schedule two, in that that the entity would also still be able to raise funding, even in the from the private sector, being that even the banks out there, then the entity or at the back of the infrastructure requirement can be able to raise such funding as well. So that's one other avenue that the entity could explore other than the DFIs as mentioned by the CEO. So yeah, we will be considering that also. And it being a Schedule 2 or Schedule 3P, it does allow it to be able to do that. Thanks.
Yes, thank you, Andrew Chabakho. Yes, indeed, I think each growth project will be evaluated on a case-by-case individually, and its funding mechanism on the requirements at the time, as Andrew highlighted. I think what needs to also be noted is that a mesh entity efficiencies, so it could be an efficient company from a value and growth perspective would yield better shareholder value on a long-term basis. Thank you.
Chairperson, this is Mashido Goloka from the department. I understand the question around funding from two perspectives. The first perspective, I think my colleagues have addressed it. It relates to moving forward, how will the merged entity be funded? I think my colleagues have talked about it. But the first set, which I want to deal with, in other words, how do you ensure that this measure is not costly? Because measures are by nature have got cost implications, no matter how you want to look at that. I think the way that you can mitigate the cost depends on how or which option do you take of the measure. There are three normally. Either you merge the two in such a way that a new company emerges, then therefore that requires a lot of money, whether for marketing and the integration of systems and so forth. And then the other one is when you look at the two companies and say which one is stronger, thereby saying the stronger one can absorb this one, with the understanding that with time, I think you can, whether you want to change the name and so forth, but as a starting point, you can say the stronger one can merge, can absorb the weaker one. In that way, you save in marketing cost and communication, even having to do the system from the beginning, and then you save a lot of cost. So currently, this work that is underway on due diligence to look at which options should we take, and then what are the disadvantages, whether from a cost and from an operational point of view, in such a way that it can be easier. Especially even around the regulatory matters, because sometimes if you have to establish an entirely new company with a new name, there are some regulatory hurdles that you may have to go, you may have to deal with. For instance, on the part of the regulator, you may have to lodge that with the gazette that there's public consultation around your licenses, or whether the transfer of ownership of certain licenses. The same thing applies if a company is listed. You find that that process that you have to take, which will take longer. So at the moment, you're looking at the various options and what each option will bring in terms of the quicker in dealing with in doing the merger, so that we don't have a situation whereby the merger drags on. I think the disadvantage of the merger dragging on is that you lose key people, and through that, if you lose key people and you can't fill them because there's an impending merger, which is the same problem that we now experience, to say that in the last couple of months since the merger was approved in principle, I think we have tried to put the moratorium on the appointment of new employees on long-term contracts. So all of them are short-term contracts. In my understanding, I think even the CFO, one at Centec, I think CEO of Centec can confirm that it's a very short-term one aligned to the timelines of the measure. Because I think the other thing that you must appreciate, especially to do with the question raised by honourable members. I think about three of honourable members have raised this around why is Centec appointing a CFO? Meanwhile, there's a measure that is coming, and yet BVI has got that. You recall that even during the time of the measure, until the measure is done, is completely done, there are certain issues that you have to deal with around your assets and so forth. So there are some financial, I mean, that will require a CFO that is there. So everything that is done around appointment is in line with the timelines that I think the department has provided. Hence, I think some of the concerns around or the issue that the acting DG raised around the initial appointment that was made for the CFO, and now they have to start the process from the beginning, because I think once those things start being disclosed, some candidates will end up withdrawing, because I think it brings a lot of uncertainty. But I think the most of the appointments that are being made at these entities are aligned to the timelines. Hence, sometimes, which is a disadvantage, is that you may not get the best candidates that you want, because no person can leave a stable job and come and join an entity whose future is uncertain because of the impending measure. I hope I've clarified those issues. Thank you very much.
Colleagues, I think the next question that was asked of us was around the timelines that we expect for the process of the measure to take. Who wants to help with that one?
Thanks. Thanks, CEO. I think the way we have indicated our timelines, as well as the other work that we'll be doing in concurrent with the legislative process, is that we have allocated this financial year to the legislative process, and at the conclusion of the legislative process, meaning that getting into 2022, 2022-23, that is when the complete mess of the actual measure would then have to be concluded. Thanks, Ian.
Thanks, Randani. Then I think the second speaker was Honourable Arnold. The questions that were raised, one was directed at you, the department, to say in this process, what are the main concerns that the entities raised to you? I think the other one was directed at all of us to say what will be the impact on the workers, the employees. And I think that question came up as well from other honorable members. So before I ask the department and maybe Centec to assist in answering the questions, I'll have a first stab at it from a BVI perspective. So this measure, as I indicated before, has got the growth motive. It is being done so that the two entities, when they are together, they have a better chance of growing compared to how they are currently performing. If we look at the inherent characters of the two entities, BBI is a company that offers broadband connectivity that is based on optical fiber networks, and that is the character of the skills that we have within BVI. And Centec, my understanding of it, is a predominantly wireless environment in terms of technology, terrestrial wireless as well as satellite. So at a technical level, the technical skills within the two entities complement rather than compete with each other. So when the two entities are merged, we're gonna need both sets of skills in the two entities. So I do not expect significant impact on people that may even require rationalization or retrenchment. And here I'm talking specifically the technical environments. And in BBI, that constitutes about between, let's say around 60% of our labor force is in that environment. And we don't expect any form of redundancy to emerge out of that. Where it gets tricky, I think it's in support services, finance, HR, admin functions. There it is possible that we may end up with some duplications on either side when the entities combine. And then at the executive levels, we are on fixed-term contract. My contract ends in November 2022. I'm not sure about my counterpart at Centec. So when the major results in one CEO, one CFO, one company secretary, etc., people at that level are on fixed-term contracts. So if my Centec counterpart becomes the CEO of the new entity, by that time, my contract will be coming to an end anyway. So I don't anticipate that we will have challenges of what to do with executives at with employees at executive level. I think we potentially have an issue that we'll have to deal with at middle management level when it relates to support services, HR, finance, supply chain, those type of services. That's how I see it at this stage. Centec, Randani, Mashilo, I think you can maybe step in, complement the answer I've given. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. Teboho here. Yes, I think it's important to note that the merging of BBI and Centec, it's just an optimization of the complementary strategic capabilities, an enhancement of the value chain towards the market. So each of those strategic capabilities from each of the entities will remain in existence. There is no replacement of any. The slide that Randani showed, where it shows the interface of government institution via BBI backhaul, and then through to Centec access networks. Those are separate functions which, when combined, complement each other to complete the value chain towards the market. So from the people perspective, the larger part of the functional teams will still be required. And if one thinks about growth on medium to long term will require supporting human capacity. So one will have to think about that yes, while there could be opportunity for optimizing initially the support staff, as Andrew says, on a medium to long term, when you grow, you may need more human capability in that regard. Yes, indeed, on the senior levels, you can't have two CEOs and you can't have two COOs, you can't have two CFOs. And I think on the basis of the contract ending or maybe buy out, the efficiency and alignment can be achieved on those levels. But mainly there's potential for significant growth. If you look at the market that is unconnected, the government institution that still needs to be connected, and the current Centec and the BBI capacity, we can outright say that we'll need more people to enable and sustain the operations of the new company. Thank you.
Okay, if I may come in, it's Randani here. The part of the question, CEO, that was asked was what was then raised by the entities Indeed, it was the issue around the employees and the effect and the impact that would be had to the employees. So what the minister did was to meet with all the employees, started with Centec and addressed the employees and indicated the growth strategy that the colleagues have just outlined, and reassuring in terms of the that the intention, it is not at all to ensure that there are people that will be fired or will lose their jobs. So she did have to give that assurance at the back of the growth perspectives prospectives that are being highlighted. She also indicated that for us to even also ensure that there is skilling and reskilling, there will be a need for a skills audit and skills assessment that needed to be done by both entities, so that then there could be an establishment of skill gaps if there are those that perhaps might require reskilling, so that then they can be able to still find place within the entities. That was done. Also, we followed up with the discussions with the unions. We've had the discussions with the unions at BBI, especially because they did raise some of the concerns, more especially around the skilling, and we had to go and indicate and unpack the reasons behind, because their concerns were saying that no, you want to do skills audit so that then you can then take us out. We did indicate that no, the purpose is to ensure that if we have gaps in the meantime, we can be reskilling and upskilling so that we are all ready when the entity comes to its functionality. I think that's just one part that perhaps maybe we hadn't responded to around the employees and the skills. Thanks. Back to you, CEO. I think we will follow your guidance, CEO. I think in terms of you unpicking the questions asked by the members, if you can assist us with that. Thanks.
Thank you, Randan. The next set of questions, I think they came from Honorable Smith. The one was around the, and I'm paraphrasing the question, it was around setup costs until the entities have been merged into one. The view at the moment is that we're not going to need assistance with setup costs. I think the two entities by themselves are already functional. I think one of the possibilities, high possibilities, BBI is currently occupying an office where we are renting. The Centec corporate office is owned by Centec. So we could look at an option where the merged entity then moves into that building that is owned by Centec. I think that's one of the options if we are looking at cost optimization or doing the merger in the most cost effective way. That's one of the possibilities that we can look at. And that is essentially where the biggest volume, number of people sits. In both entities. But I think that process of setting up into one, I don't anticipate that it will require financial assistance from the shareholder, from National Treasury and so on. I think the issue of duplication at executive level, I have already addressed that issue, and even at the management levels, I think the character of the two entities as they are today, and what we will need when they come together limits the possibility of duplication. And as I said, my view is perhaps only in some of the support services could that become an issue. And this is something that we've already gone through in detail with the labor union that represents the majority of workers at BVI. We've already done an unpacking of that scenario. The union is reasonably comfortable because even the bulk of their membership comes from the technical environment. There was a question that was asked about the Elon Musk Starlink satellite. As BBI, my Centec counterpart, we don't really play in that space. I think that is a question that Centec is probably in a better position to answer.
Thank you, Andrew. Yes, indeed. Opportunities are there, but what we are doing from a technology evolution trajectory is to explore launching our own satellite as a country for reasons of technology, sovereignty, cost efficiency. Digi talked about a need to reduce cost to communicate. So you are better able to achieve that when you have control in the investment yourself as the state organ. So that's what we're looking at. We have developed a business case to launch a South Africa-based satellite, mainly to carry both media and connectivity services. And we are exploring this further to ensure that we also take the country to the level of its peers and leading in the technology space. But most important, I think, for this conversation is the sovereignty of technology. You wouldn't want to rely too much on private operators where impasses correlating to service degradation or outages and can happen at both political and business levels. So we're trying to position South Africa to have its own satellite in that regard. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just to amplify that which the CEO of Centec has said on the issue of Elon Musk's Starlink satellite, Cabinet has mandated Centec to look at the possibility of establishing our own satellite as a country. This is because of a number of issues that have to be mitigated against. I think one is the issue of sovereignty that the CEO of Centec has mentioned. But the other issue, which is very critical, is around large capital outflow. If currently South Africa doesn't have its own satellite and then if you look at the trend of the market, it's growing towards satellite, whether it's MultiChoice, whether it's Centec, whatever. So that's where the trend is going. But the biggest challenge that we face is that given that we don't have a local satellite owner, these satellite operators are foreign companies. So there's a lot of money that leaves this country to those foreign countries. And if we could help in arresting that, you can imagine how much of investment that money would make in the country. Just Centec alone has a lot of money without including, uses a lot of money in satellite fees. Actually, is the biggest cost driver on its expenses, satellite rentals, and they are done in dollars, not the South African rand. So if the South African rand is really declining, then the situation becomes worse. So you can imagine if we can help in retaining that large capital locally in terms of technological development and also job creation and engineering capacity for the country, especially at the time when you talk about youth unemployment. So having our own satellite, remember, it's not only just the services, but building it, the various components that we can manufacture locally. So it will do a lot in economic spin-off other than the issue of the sovereignty, which the CEO of Centec has added. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, the next set of questions, they came from Honorable Nene. I think it was more around the...
Honorable Nana, Honorable Nana.
Sorry?
Honorable Nana, not...
Oh, is it Nana? Oh, ish. My apologies.
I just want to correct you so that he does not...
Okay. Okay, I misheard you. Thank you for the correction and apologies to Honorable Nana.
Thanks, Chairman, for coming to my rescue.
Okay. The questions were about the experience of merging municipalities where one came into the merger from a strong position, the other one from a weaker position, and the results were not so successful. And whether, you know, what have we learned from similar measures, and how is this going to be handled differently? I think we sometimes having the ability to learn from other people's processes that didn't work well is an advantage that those who do a merger later have, is that you can learn from what didn't work in the other mergers. And we also have the transaction advisors who are helping us with the strategy development. They also have people in there who were involved in other measures, including in the private sector. So we are mindful of those types of experiences, and we are taking them into consideration when we formulate the strategy and the business plan of the merged entity, and how it's going to be managed. And if I can maybe talk some specifics, I think Centec comes into the transaction in a healthier financial position than BBI. BBI, the biggest issue that we've had in the last couple of years are the shareholder loans on our books. We have been waiting for approval to convert those shareholder loans into equity, into more shares, so that we can go into the transaction in a much healthier position. And I think in one of the portfolio committee, not this committee, the portfolio committee of communications, some of the MPs who represent, I think, the DA on that committee have in the past asked us a question to say, are you not doing this merger so that you can transfer BBI's financial difficulties to Centec? And the answer is no, that's not what is happening. So the latest development on that is that the shareholder minister of the IDC, Honorable Minister Patel, has given the IDC this month in March permission that they can also convert their shareholder loan in BBI into equity. So we've already started that process, and by the time we have the audited financial results of BBI, we will have removed the shareholder loans, converted them into equity, and that will make the net asset value of BBI to be in the region of 1.2 billion positive. Then it's just the normal income statement of BVI and the cash flow, which we are managing very well. So this latest development then removes a significant obstacle that could have been seen by a neutral observer as the merger bringing a weak BVI to come and weaken Sentech further. So by that issue being addressed now, we will be making sure that both entities go into the merger in a very healthy position from assets and liabilities point of view. Then what remains then is the agenda to drive growth, to use the strengths of both entities to drive growth. The other issue that has also come up in recent discussions with the department is that both BVI and Sentech going forward, now that we know we are merging, we have a timeline for merging, we need to start working together in pursuing opportunities in the market. I've already discussed that with the chairperson of my board, and we will be making an approach to the board of Sentech that we start setting up a joint team of both entities that will look at opportunities on which we can start collaborating so that by the time we get to the merger, we've already built that culture of working together. Then there was an issue of the longer the merger is delayed. That is something that does cause instability. We have had resignations in BVI where skilled people are fearful of how the merger will affect them, and because they are skilled people, they are able to find jobs somewhere else. I think it is in our interest, both BVI and Sentech, that we try and speed up the process of the merger. The longer it delays, the longer it creates the opportunity for us to lose the people who are skilled in our entities. There was another question, I think, that was related to the recruitment that is currently taking place for the Sentech CFO. But I think that question has been addressed. Randani, the colleagues from Sentech, I don't know if you want to add anything on the issues that were raised by Honorable Nana.
Thanks, CEO, Randani here. No, I just wanted to add a bit around the lessons learned. Indeed, we did do that that assessment. Hence, the department was the first one to start doing and granting BVI the conversion, that they can do the conversion, so that then that addresses their balance sheet challenges. And then with that, we then have been writing and encouraging the Minister of TTIC, that is Department of Trade and Industry, Trade Industry and Competition, to ensure that we get concurrence from their side also. And as the CEO has indicated, we have then favorably received that. So meaning that then that now BBI going into the merger, it will be in a much better position going into this merger. I think that's the part that I wanted to just expand on. Thanks.
Yes, thank you, Andrew Teba, for here. I think just to add on the issues of whether the merger is sustainable or not, merging two entities, learning from the experience of the the municipalities. Yes, I think we can take some learnings there, Honorable Nana, and do things differently. But the potential for the new company growth, it's quite positive in the ICT and telecommunications sector. I mean, this is just supported by the consolidation of assets that Andrew is talking about and the strength of the market as we have been reflecting earlier. You know, on average, the asset turnover, we will now have a positive asset in the beginning. The asset turnover of a telecommunications company, looking at most of the time above 20%. So that's still quite positive and it's not in decline. It's been now changed for better by the realities of the new normal. So we do see a very strong case, a sustainability trajectory for the new company there. And then the CFO appointment, why are we appointing now when we are on the eve of the merger? All the strategic appointments at Centec do consider the Centec BBI merger. So we do go into contracting, short-term contracting in consideration of the merger. So we set the period and also do set that the period will end when the merger happens. An example is on some of the ones that we've said we will go with either 2 or 3 years and they'll end the merger. So whichever comes first, then the contract will come to an end. So we just want to reiterate that the issues of the merger and duplication of human capacity is being taken serious at Centec. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The last set of questions, I think they came from Honorable Modise. The issue was related to employees and the union. So I'll have a first go at it. And then there was a question raised about assessment of skills. So we have done labor engagements at BBI. I can confirm that. And I led those labor engagements. We have explained this process as a growth-driven measure, and that is how we see it. We have done an assessment, as I've indicated before, that indicated that we're going to need more skills, and particularly that on the technical side, the skills in BBI and those in Centec complement rather than compete with each other. Therefore, there is a much lower risk of redundancy and retrenchment. And the union, based on that analysis, they were comfortable that we are on the right path. When the current minister, Honorable Stellanda Rennie Abrahams, came into the portfolio, one of the programs that she initiated was a skills audit in the department. There were still departments, separate departments, as well as the entities reporting to her. So we have done across the entire sector, including at BBI, we have done a skills assessment, a skills audit, skills assessment, and that audit identified areas where we need training and development of employees. The outcome of that skills assessment is a standard agenda item on the engagements we have with labor in BBI, both related to the measure and not related to the measure. So from a BBI point of view, I can confirm that we do not foresee the issue of skills becoming a challenge that could result in some of our employees not making it into the measure. Randani and then my counterparts from Sentech can maybe proceed with their perspective on that question. Thank you.
No, I think from our perspective, I think it's what we were highlighting in terms of the minister meeting the all the employees as well as so this we have addressed it from our perspective, from our side. Perhaps maybe from the Sentech side, they can go ahead. Thanks.
Yes, from the Sentech perspective as well, our employees are kept up to date in terms of the development of the merger between BVI and Sentech. So they're very well up to date in terms of the developments there. They give an opportunity to also raise and contribute towards enhancing the approach. We set up a team based on selected team members, and they are representative from various department of the organization there. From the skills and capability, yes, we also conducted a skills audit whose outcome was a need to enhance digital capabilities to align with the fourth industrial revolution era and to meet the future demand. We also have a standing agenda. It is also a company capability. A human capacity development where we're looking at intervening with more than 1,000 digital interventions per annum. This targeting to drive the digital skilling is to enable Sentech to fit into the future and also position ourselves for the new company. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. I think, Chair, I know we took quite a long time in responding to the questions, but the team led by the CEO and the COO have exhausted them. Just to conclude, Chair, from the department's perspective, to then indicate that certainly this is a delicate matter, but also critical. So the minister has set up a joint oversight committee. We also have a CEO's forum, although I must confess that we haven't yet met, but I've also then held individual engagements with the entities, and those are continually being held. And this is to respond to the concerns that were raised, Chair, with regards to good governance and ensuring that both entities are financially viable and in a healthy state as we move towards this merger. So that is certain there. And one of the issues that we addressed under the Joint Oversight Committee was on the impact of jobs, to try then to allay fears, especially as indicated by both Honorable Arnold as well as I think Honorable Nana, as well as Honorable Modise, and all the Honorable members. I think the concern certainly is would always be maintaining jobs and making sure that there is some level of job stability. The impact, as indicated, would be in terms of the senior management in the main, and those are then aligned to the contracts. However, because of the technical skills, Honorable members certainly would want to preserve as many as possible, and also then the think tank and the intellectual capacity or capability would also want to ensure that we share it within the sector. And then with regards to the research question in terms of the model, when we came up with the ICT policy review, we looked in terms globally as well on how these infrastructure companies are aggregated. And one of the intents or interests for us was to say, at the moment you have, as we roll out SA Connect, you know, we have to sign various MSAs with individuals, and there's a tedious process of trying to get that approval from National Treasury in terms of deviation.
But if we were to aggregate one singular state infrastructure company, ICT infrastructure company, it probably would reduce then this requirement from ensuring the procurement processes of the PFMA. So we're quite confident that with that, Jay, there will be less of the red tape as well. But also, we wanted to also address the issues more deliberately, because at the moment it is there in both entities how they should do business within the public or private sector and commit commercially. But there are restrictions. I mean, for example, BBI does not have the necessary license for that. We're only focusing in terms of wholesale. And that would be redressed because CENTEC would have those necessarily licensed. So the aggregation of assets as well as then the licenses is also going to ensure more effective performance of the two entities as well. And then we are the only reason there is a moratorium in terms of the recruitment to a large extent, but there are those critical positions in line with governance and compliance requirements that we would need to fulfill during this period. And we talked about, I think there was a question on the time frame. Our intent is that we'd like to table this proposed infrastructure company to cabinet this year, this financial year coming, and hopefully we'll see an introduction to parliament by the end of March 2022. But there could be all sorts of other unforeseen delays, and therefore that's why we would therefore link then the current contracts to then say all these contracts, even the ones that we're filling vacancies, are up till then the dissolution of those companies and the conclusion of the measure. I just wanted to clarify those issues, Chair, and thank you very much to all the members.
Thank you very much, Acting DG, and thanks for trying your best not to leave out any question asked by honourable members. I'm just going to check with members. Honourable Nana, I see. The way you are moving, I can see you have got a follow-up question.
No, you see, Chairman.
I can read you that line. No. Yeah, it's like
you see the acting DDG. I have a soft spot for the acting DDG. Mm. I am friends with her father, Professor Jordan.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. I'm nervous when I'm dealing with communication because of her.
You should have told us about your conflict of interest.
Thank you, Chair. I'm glad that this is coming, Chair, and we need to, therefore, not the sins of my father. I'm not.
I'm fine, Chair. I'm just hoping that you will take into consideration the proposal I made to you. Maybe we can talk about that when we are dealing with minutes.
Okay, no, fine. Honorable Arnold? Okay.
Chairperson, are you calling me?
Yes, I was just checking if you have got any follow-up or we are fine.
No, Chairperson, I'm covered. Thank you. Thanks.
All right. Is there any other member who is not